How do you do? Just a word of friendly warning. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to, well, we've warned you.
Hey, if you're a kid of the 80s like I am, I think you'll be really thrilled with what we're about to discuss. On Skype here, I have Jessica Dwyer and Robin Block. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
So we're in like three different time zones right now, too, which is exciting that we managed to make this work. So.
Yeah,
so Robin has been losing sleep a lot thanks to us.
So it's 11 p.m. here in sunny London.
Oh, is it sunny there? That
I hear sarcasm. I hear sarcasm over the line.
Yeah, I feel your pain. I just got back from L.A. and we're in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the weather here is not quite as nice as it was out on the West Coast. But, you know, I'm still adjusting back to normal. But Jessica and Robin are producing a documentary called In Search of Darkness, which is a journey into the culture and soul of 80s horror films, which is, you know, near and dear to most of our listeners' hearts. So I'm just going to kind of let you guys run with this and explain to me what you're doing.
Okay, so we are producing a retrospective documentary on the 80s horror genre. And we're sort of halfway through our Kickstarter campaign. The Kickstarter campaign has gone phenomenally well. We've got a world-class lineup of talent attached to this project. And it's going from strength to strength. At the time of this recording, which is the 23rd of October, we've got some really huge announcements to make over the next week or so, leading up to Halloween. And the concept behind the documentary is really simple. We want to contextualize 80s horror. We want to revisit how you first felt when you first sort of had these movies impact you. And it's going to be a huge nostalgic roller coaster ride back to one of cinema's greatest eras. And, you know, the last thing I'll say about it from a sort of introductory point of view is that, you know, if you're doing an 80s horror documentary, obviously you're going to have 80s horror icons involved. And as I mentioned, we've got some amazing names, but also we're bringing modern horror greats and horror influencers. So we have horror YouTubers, the editors of some of the biggest horror magazines involved. And so bringing everyone together, really for the first time in history, to look at 80s horror.
I love the angle that you're taking, as you were saying, contextualizing, because I have a lot of memories tied up in, you know, the Reagan era in particular, and coming home and seeing those addresses to the nation where he's like, hey guys, this might be the night we get irradiated. And then,
yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, so horror was kind of an escape from some of that craziness that we were, as children, we were being subjected to every night on TV.
Well, one thing that I really like about this is that, you know, we are looking at that time and the culture that kind of created these films, and where you look at things like George Romero's Day of the Dead and how that kind of showed the military complex at odds with everyone else. And then one I always keep going back to is Brian Usna's Society, and how that was all about how the excess of the rich and how everyone felt like, oh, they were apart from them. And that movie kind of showed us, oh yeah, there's a reason we feel that way. And I really love us tackling that part of it as well as celebrating that decade.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you just mentioned Society, and we're lucky enough to have Brian Usna, the writer and director of Society, attached to the project. He'll be appearing in 80s Horror Doc.
That's fantastic, because that is such a bizarre and kind of wonderful movie In a lot of ways, it's almost like the 80s version of like a Thomas Swift or something, where, you know, like kind of it's just such good satire. And I think it's something we don't. They always talk about the class war happening now, but I think a lot of younger people don't realize like how stark that was. And in the 80s, how everybody thought they could get a piece of that lifestyle, and to see the way he presented that story in that way, saying, no, they're basically a whole nother species of people, was a really great angle on that too.
Right. And that's one of the things I love using horror as metaphor. And that's really coming back these days. I mean, Wes Craven kind of went back to it with Scream back in the 90s, but that kind of got, you know, we kind of got thrown to the wayside a little bit. And now it's coming back with movies like Get Out, where you can use the genre to really talk about things that are going on. And that always goes back to me for like the Twilight Zone, how Serling was kind of the king of that. And you have these directors like Joe Dante, like Tom Holland, like Brian Usna, who are all in this documentary with us. They're part of this. We've got them. And we get to pick their brains and talk to them about that. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's really great. It, you know, it kind of also reminds me of the book Dance Macabre by Stephen King, where he talks about, you know, the same kind of concept of being a kid, going to the theater to see sci-fi movies, westerns, and all this stuff. But there would show the newsreel footage of like how the Russians were beating us to space, and kind of how that informed like the giant bug movies and everything. You know, like I think that's where horror really shines, is just like you were saying, Jessica, about how it is a great vehicle for commentary. And I think it gets devalued, especially when even though movies like Hostel did have a social commentary, I think people lost the point when they tried to recreate that feeling and they just focused on the wrong parts.
Right. The gimmick, I guess you call it jumping on the train and thinking that you're doing that's what he's just showing people getting cut to pieces. And no, there's actually thought behind of what they're doing. And that gets lost in translation when you're just trying to rip it off. And also on part of that too is the caliber of actors that horror has in it. And that's we have some of them as well. We have Dee Wallace, who that woman can scream and cry and fight and be a mom better than like any actress that I've ever seen in a movie. You know, I mean, look at Cujo, for the love of God. I mean, that's a tour de force there. And another is Jeffrey Combs, who, if you've never seen this guy, really, I mean, he's a Shakespearean trained actor. You know, he can do it. He walks the walk. He's an actor. And I think he's just amazing. And he's in this. So we got Jeffrey Combs, too, which I'm really thrilled about.
Is it going to be a little bit of a Reanimator reunion? Because we've not only got Jeffrey Combs, but we've got Stuart Gordon, the director of Reanimator. And also this week we announced that we have Barbara Crampton as well, who, is amazing and has been ever so helpful. It's all going really well, but there's something really magical and powerful about 80s horror, especially, I mean, if you're like me, I'm 40, and you know, I've found myself in my life sort of returning back to the comfort and warmth that 80s horror sort of offered us. And it's kind of weird because it's horror and you'd expect it to be sort of, you know, something that's not pleasant, and but actually it's really weird because as I've been meeting so many people and as the sort of horror community have really embraced what we're trying to do, I've really started to understand that, especially 80s horror, it's the feelings people associate with 80s horror are so nostalgic, so warm. It's a very sort of powerful feeling, and that's why these films, the aesthetic, the tropes, why they've all endured, because they have, you know, there's some magic there.
I agree. Yeah. And I feel I'm the same, you know, I'm the same age as you, Robin. And I think that it's like our fairy tales in a lot of ways, that, you know, I take that same kind of you know, the people always, when they bring up Grimm's fairy tales, are always like, well, those are the sanitized versions that most of these kids grew up with. But really, I think this era of horror in particular, I do think that the intended audience, a lot of it was preteen kids.
Well, and you can see, like, in the because we have a lot of current and modern horror masters that we've gotten on board with us. And one of them that I'm super thrilled about, I've interviewed him a few times for Horror Hound, and he's just a joy, and he's one of us, is Lee Winnell. And if you talk to Lee, he's a fan, and these films influenced all the things that he's doing now. Like, the reason he and James Wan connected was due to their love of horror, and you know, he grew up loving the same stuff, and it just is like this beautiful circle, and kind of in on the same level of that is the fact that, like Robin was talking about, he's learning as we go along with this that horror fans are a family, and we connect through the love of this genre and these stories and these films in particular. And that's why it's sort of like, you know, Freddie, you and I have known each other for a while, like we said, and every time you go to Horror on Weekend or a Horror Con, it's like a family reunion, because everyone knows, you know, you get it. You're the guy that knows what I love. You get why I'm here. And that kind of goes back to that feeling of this, you know, the love of this genre and these films in particular, because we all grew up with them.
It's interesting, because when you think back to being at school, the kids that loved horror movies were always the outsiders. And it's odd. Well, not odd. It's sort of, it's kind of ironic that now horror movies and sort of self-identifying with the horror genre is all about belonging. So you'll see people, and I went to see John Carpenter in concert last week, and I looked around the crowd, and you know, it was almost tribal, is probably the best way of putting it. You know, there's lots of people with tattoos, lots of people that you know, are in the scene. It felt like a community, and that's one of the things that I understand now why this project is being successful. It's because it's the grassroots, the fan base support this. It's something they want to see happen. So it's a lot of responsibility, because obviously it's something that we need to absolutely deliver on. But that's why we've been so lucky with the names we've got attached now. And so that none of this would have been possible without the support of the horror community. And it's not like other projects I've worked on, like action cinema, or there's something unique to horror. You're kind of in or you're out. You're not really on the sidelines. And horror is a huge genre, but it's like self-contained. It's like you're either, you know, you are horror, you're a horror fan, or you're sort of not, you know. Like, I kind of like that. I think it's definitely one of the reasons why we've been able to look at just focusing on one era of cinema around this, because it's quite a niche, when you think about it, it's quite a niche subject to be tackling, like 80s horror. But it's highly relevant, because we're almost revisiting that era in the current political life. You know, if you were growing up in the 80s, just like you said, Freddie, like, you know, you saw the Reagan address, you didn't know if you were going to wake up tomorrow. There's a lot of uncertainty in the world. And those sort of things all came through the work. And we've almost in a bit of a global time warp. The 80s is in, you know, that's the aesthetic we're all following now. And yet the world is still really unstable. And that's, it's funny how things work.
Do either of you watch, it's an ABC sitcom here called The Goldbergs?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure you know by now that Freddy Krueger will be appearing on their next episode. And I think it'll probably be airing tomorrow night, I think. But I just thought that was interesting, too, that shows, I mean, it crosses into being, it belongs to the fans. But like you were saying, I think we take an extra step in that ownership of 80s horror in particular, where it is so much part of the horror fan's identity that that Freddy Krueger is just a shorthand for so many things for us. Just like Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers, like these characters, they're right up there with like the universal monsters as far as being at this point timeless, and they're going to be around probably for generations, where we're going to see, you know, reiterations of these stories and the look and everything. So I do think it's interesting what you're saying about having the resurgence, so much as it's not even that filmmakers, I do love the new stuff that's coming out, like you had mentioned Get Out earlier, where that's just a very original thing. But I also think that there is a literal resurgence of those actual horror icons themselves right around the bend as well. You know, like,
well,
go ahead, Jess.
Well, I was just going to say, it's kind of like what happened with the Universal Monsters, because they came out in the 30s, and then with the advent of television, everybody got back into them. That's how Famous Monsters kind of happened, was at the time, those monsters in like Dracula and Frankenstein, all of those old school movies were being reshown, and now you've got the internet, and you've got DVD and Blu-ray, and all this opportunity for kids that weren't even born in 1984, 1985. To re, you know, everybody's seeing Halloween 2018 and like, oh, what's that's this came from, when did that originally come out, huh? And they'll go back and they'll, you know, they're like, what's the hell, why is everyone going, oh yeah, she did the scene like he did, where did that come from? And then they find out, oh, there was one that, oh, and then they'll go back and find it. And it's sort of happening again with like the next level of horror gods and icons with these guys. And now we're talking about Friday the 13th is going to get a reboot with LeBron James producing it.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that sounds like that's going to happen now. And it's kind of crazy how it's sort of just coming back in. And now you've got Robert Englund saying, I think I got one more nightmare in me.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And then did you read, by the way, I'm kind of going off a tangent here, but did you hear today that he actually worked on Halloween set?
No.
The original? It came out today. He was talking on a show. Robert Englund helped spread leaves around in California to make it look like fall in Illinois.
That is, and so he was weird.
I know, right? But I mean, seriously, it's like it's all circular. It's all coming back, and the time is ripe for something like this to revisit it and see why these films were so important.
You know, not to get super sociological here, but I gotta say, don't you think there's even more potency in the fact that our generation, the 40-somethings now, we kind of being, you know, that you hear the term man-child thrown around a lot, but the truth of it is, not only do you have this new generation coming in who are interested in this, in 80s horror, but you have... at least from like an economic standpoint, the participation, like, you know, we're buying merchandise, we're going to the movies a lot more than our parents did, where I think where, you know, our parents may have been big fans of Hammer horror or something, but they didn't carry that into their adult years the same way we do in this generation, the children of the 80s. I think that just adds so much potency to the resurgence too.
Well, and also on top of that, I think too, it's access. We had, you know, our generation came in at a time when, and that's going to, you know, part of what the documentary is about is how why this specific decade was so big for horror. And part of that, I think, and Robin, please don't let me like hog this interview. part of this, the reason these movies were so prevalent and why they stuck with us, I think, was you had cable television hitting its prime at that point. VHS was a whole other level of access to us, where we were able to just revisit over and over and over again these movies, and they became part of our routine or our culture. I mean, there were times in growing up where I would wear out videos. I would literally watch Nightmare on Elm Street or Freddy Krueger movie every day for an entire month. I'd watch it, maybe the same one, just because I loved it. I just stopped, pop it in and just sit back and watch. And it just gave us the ability to revisit and get more and more acquainted with it.
Don't you feel too, like, I mean, Shudder, I think, is kind of changing the landscape a little bit with this, but there is, in the 80s and the 90s, we had Joe Bob, who, you know, and he was acting out of necessity.
Who's in the film.
Yeah,
who's
in our documentary. I saw that. I love him so much. I think he is, you know, he's one of, I think, a universal horror host for a lot of us because he was so ubiquitous because of cable and everything. But, like, he's acting out of necessity with what films he can air and everything. But in a way, he's also curating things that I think with new horror, you don't get that curation. Nobody's really controlling what the viewer is exposed to necessarily. So I think that added kind of to the magic where we had a shared culture and why we continue to kind of share that culture that maybe doesn't exist now, where we were tuning into the same cable show. Joe Bob was hosting a monster movie, and that's what everyone was watching if you were into monster movies.
Well, and also it gave you a friend. This sounds very bizarre and weird to a lot of people, but Joe Bob was your buddy.
Yeah.
You know, he was your friend that was showing you, hey, kids, or he was like your dirty uncle.
Yeah.
That was, all right, we're going to talk about boobs and blood and this, and here's my count. And he was in on it with you. He was teaching you stuff, which he still does, by the way, if you've seen that, The Last Drive-In, which was a lie. It's not The Last Drive-In, by God. He's coming back. But he would talk to you about things, and he'd always be there, and he was like the buddy that you had. And this kind of goes along with Mystery Science Theater 3000 as well. That was the same thing. You were watching movies with your friend.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the horror host was such a big part of it too, and kind of, like you said, helped that along.
You know, this film that we're putting together, you know, it's never been done before, what we're doing. So the people that we've brought together have never been sort of put together, and where we are right now in terms of our recording, we're just about to hit our first stretch goal, and as part of reaching that stretch goal, like, literally we're just a few hundred pounds away from hitting it, so I'm expecting by tomorrow morning we will be there. But we're going to deliver alongside a sort of 90 to 100 minute cut. We're going to be delivering a 3-hour extended cut, which is going to be like the definitive guide to 80s horror. So we're going to be able to talk about a lot more movies and make sure that we cover even more topics. And, you know, it's almost like going down the rabbit hole, because there's so many movies from that era that people hang on to. But it's not just the movies, it's the aesthetic, it's the artwork. You know, we're talking about an era where you'd go into the VHS store and you'd pick up a film and you'd decide to rent it based on the cover art, and the film could be terrible. Right? And often it was. And when I was a kid, I didn't mind. I was like, well, you know, I've sort of been sold the concept, but occasionally the film would be as good as the cover art, you know. And that was the amazing thing. You don't get that now. I feel what's really sad about the sort of film world is we've got access to everything on our phones. You know, the entire film library of humanity is sort of a few clicks away. And with all that choice, you get the sort of paradox of choice. But back in the 80s, you didn't. If you rented out a movie that night, you had to sit down and watch it. You couldn't just give it up after 10 minutes and find something else. That was your entertainment for the evening. And there's something about having almost being forced to watch this stuff, to go with your choices, which is part of the reason why that era is so compelling now. And we don't get that. The kids who are growing up in an on-demand world almost have too much choice, and you hear too much about a movie before you even decide to engage, whereas it was a polar opposite back in the 80s, and it was a simpler time. But I miss that. And maybe that's nostalgia. Maybe that's sort of looking back on rose-tinted glasses. But there's something very special about the experience of going into a shop, looking at the cover art, looking on the back of the VHS, seeing what critics have said, seeing how that was marketed to us. That will never happen again. I think that's sad. I've got a young daughter who's 2 years old. I can't imagine when she's old enough to start choosing films and going to the cinema, like how will her experience be different? How will she be able to relate to, getting a bad movie? You know, because you can't really do that now. If you start, 10 minutes into a film now, if it isn't gripped, it hasn't grabbed you, you can stop it. You can choose something else. So I don't know if you guys have got sort of any comments about that, whether you found that experience yourself, or I'm interested.
I personally miss the video stores because I like the hunt that was involved with finding things and discovering things that came from that, but also just you would bump into somebody in the horror section or the sci-fi section or wherever, and you would start talking about movies. Yeah. And it would be a one-on-one thing, and that's kind of why I love horror cons, because conventions in general, even, is you find fellow people and you talk about the stuff face to face, and it's different from being online, and you know, you discover things together, or you can go, you know, you're grabbing for that copy of Zombie Shitstorm Volume 33 or whatever, and yeah, someone grabs your hand and says, "Don't do it," you know, and you're like, "Oh, really?" And then they tell you why. But I mean, I miss that. Miss that time, and that was like a thing that kind of, like I said, that's what part of the VHS times that we grew up in helped grow us as fans.
Yeah, I had a very similar opinion to this as you guys. I think most of us in our age group probably do. But like, I worked in a video store as well as spent, you know, that was like the golden moment when mom and dad would be like, "We're going to go." It was Network Video for us, which had a great horror film section and a great sci-fi section. And it was a trip where, okay, kids, you each get to pick one movie. And make sure, make it count, because that's your weekend. And we,
no pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was an adult and I was working in a video store, I made a point, like, it was the same thing where I was like, I want to know everything about a particular genre. I would just start alphabetically and start working my way through movie by movie. And it's like you were saying, Robin, if I took it home and I started it, I finished it. And part of that is, one, there weren't the distractions we have now, which in and of itself, not just when choosing a movie or choosing to finish a movie, like, you could lose yourself in something so much easier, I think, because you didn't have the smartphone and you didn't have laptops, or even at that point in my life, we didn't even have a computer in our home. It was really very much like a very particular experience with very little in its orbit other than you and the VCR and the TV.
Exactly. So, Freddie, I have a question for you now that I found out that you worked in a video store, because I worked in one too. What was your go-to? Because I had a time when a guy came up and said, "I want a movie that's going to make my girlfriend throw up." What was your go-to movie when someone said, I want a movie that's going to scare me to death, or I want a movie that's going to make my significant other barf?
Well, that's easy. Like, for me, Dead Alive or Brain Dead. Really? Yeah.
Yes!
Yeah. If somebody came in and wanted to be grossed out, I would steer them to that or Meet the Feebles, both Peter Jackson. For scary movies, honestly, Exorcist 3 was always a go-to for me. Even more so than the original. And I love that it's having kind of a renaissance right now. I've noticed it's been getting a lot more love, which I think because Exorcist 2 was so bad, I think Exorcist 3 got short shrift from most people. But
I want to say if it was Hereditary has made people go back to Exorcist 3 because of the crawling on the ceiling scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because that immediately made me think of that.
Yeah, and that's technically, I guess that's a 90s move. They're the ones I mentioned are 90s movies.
Yeah, but they're not 80s, but that, I mean, come on, Dead Alive, you have to tell them to go to that one if you want them to puke.
That's right.
Well, that's, you know, that movie, we in Europe, we got that that was released as Brain Dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I've heard today is that and Bad Taste are all getting 4K restorations.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know how can you watch Bad Taste in 4K?
I was kind of thinking the same thing.
On like 16mm.
I can prove it.
It took 4 years to make, and Peter Jackson made it with his parents and his mates in New Zealand. I'm not sure, it'll probably be on the DVD or the Blu-ray or even the 4K release, but there's a wonderful documentary about Peter Jackson making Bad Taste, and the documentary is called Good Taste Made Bad Taste. And it's just like the alien heads are being cooked up in Peter Jackson's mother's oven, and you know, like he did it consecutively over 4 summers with his mates, and to see, there's something really clever about that narrative, just the narrative of sort of Peter Jackson's career, how you can come from New Zealand in, I think, Auckland or Wellington, where he grew up, and reach the very, very heights of Hollywood, just through following your passion. And when I think about Bad Taste, I know it wasn't, was that 80s? Was Bad Taste 80s?
I feel like that was late 80s.
I think it was 1989 or something like that.
Yeah, it was at the tail end, right? But like, I love that aesthetic, that sort of reachability. You know, we're not talking about the thing. We're not talking about something that is like a masterpiece, but we are talking about a film that has, you know, a soul. You know, there was something to that. It wouldn't have gone anywhere if it hadn't have had that.
Well, and we had the actor that played Lionel from Dead Alive or Brain Dead,
yeah.
You didn't know where you were. We had him at Horror Hound Weekend. It was his first American convention, and my sister and I were kind of his handlers, and it was the most hilarious thing. He's walking around, and it wasn't even the big hotel that we do our show at, and he came in, and he's looking around, and he's like, I think there's the equivalent of my country's population here, because it just gives you an idea of how New Zealand isn't that big, and it's taken, you know, everybody knows it now, and it's the world knows it for the Lord of the Rings and Peter Jackson, and he had a great time. He actually brought the vest that he wore with him. He still had it.
Really?
Yeah, it was hilarious, and he was sweet.
That was one of my favorite movies, Brain Dead or Dead Alive. Like, it was just, you know what, I'm going to revisit that. It had so many bonkers scenes. Like, just thinking about it, like, one of my favorite scenes is when her ear, his mum's ear, falls off.
Oh,
goes
yeah.
The custard.
God.
So gross.
But even, like, the rat monsters at the beginning. Like, the whole thing is just awesome. So,
and they're, like, stop motion, too, which was fantastic.
Yeah, the little rat monkeys.
Rat monkeys, yeah.
I love it.
Oh, my God. It was such a great movie.
So, I'm really pumped about In Search of Darkness. I don't know if you could tell, but I am. I'm very thrilled about it. And so, if people want, your main site, is that right? Is it creatorvc.com?
Yes. Well, that's the name of my company, which develops special interest factual entertainment. But there's actually a website specifically for this project. Right now, it's redirecting to the Kickstarter. But if you go to 80shorrordoc.com, you'll find all the information. And if you go, the day this podcast comes out, it will probably go straight to the Kickstarter. You'll have the most up-to-date information on the contributors we've got attached. And like I said, I've got some major names which we're about to announce over the next week or so. And you know, if you're interested in 80s horror, if you want to be part of this, you'll never get another opportunity to help make this happen. And there's, at the time of this conversation, if I just check on Kickstarter, we have 864 backers so far, with about 12 days to go. So all in all, I'm expecting about 1,250 backers, and that community of people that really love 80s horror are going to be responsible for making something that I think the whole horror community will embrace. And just to be able to be part of that is a real honor.
Yeah, and by the way, it's 80s80shorrordoc.com, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not the word 80s, it's 80s.
Yep, so I think our listeners would definitely be on board for this, and I'll be putting this out at 9 a.m. tomorrow, Eastern Standard Time. So if you're hearing this, there's still 11 days left in this campaign. I think it's something you'll definitely want to look into, because it sounds amazing. So thank you.
Thank you. And there are some awesome perks to go with it as well when you pledge. So check those out. We've got soundtracks, t-shirts, all kinds of cool things. And Graham Humphreys did our artwork, and he is amazing.
That's awesome. So check that out. Thanks again to Jessica Dwyer and excuse me, Robin Block. We met in the middle of time zones. We've opened a rift in the space-time continuum.
We're all going to die now, because we're all going to be sucked into the black hole.
Right.
Freddie, thanks so much for having us on. Obviously, we'll support the podcast. We'll share it across our social channels. And if you're interested in following us, we've built up quite a following. We've got about just over 3,000 Twitter followers. The handle for all our social media is 80s Horror Doc. So 80s Horror Doc. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and join in.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks again, guys.
Take care, Freddie. Cheers. Bye-bye.
If he should go to